Chapter 4. Should I ask if anyone remembers anything from the last class? What stuck from the last class? Anything? Huh? At the end. Because then we'll never get to the beginning. And then poor Narayani Mataji will be in trouble in the next class. Does anyone remember anything? Just curiously. Because that's what a teacher always wonders. Does anyone remember anything? Yes.
We heard of the difference between the love of Devaki and the love for Krishna and the love of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj also, and for Krishna. One being in a chariot form.
Thanks. Lucky.
With knowledge of his occurrence, of his being the Lord, and one being Kevala.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we heard of the two different kinds of praying. That the Devaki was in full knowledge that Krishna was the Lord, and Yashoda was not, or rather, even though she may have been sometimes, her love for Krishna was always stronger than the Aishwarya. And we heard how by appearing from the womb, Krishna created that parental affection.
Yeah.
And by showing his forearms, then he established also the Aishwarya bhava.
And he told her to remember both. Quite interesting. Even though he favors complete love. What was the term Prabhupada used before? The something purna, prema purna or something. But still he told her to remember. Both. Okay. So the doors, this is text one. This is a real drama. This chapter is entitled what? The Atrocities of King Kamsa. He's going to do horrible things. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King Parikit, the doors inside and outside the house closed as before. Thereafter, the inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child." Who was this newborn child? Who was it? Yogamaya. "And they thus awakened from their beds." Srila Vishnu Prabhupada, from second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has remarked that the watchmen were just like dogs. At night the dogs in the street act like watchmen. If one dog barks, many other dogs immediately follow it by barking. Although the street dogs are not appointed by anyone to act as watchmen, they think they are responsible for protecting the neighborhood. And as soon as someone unknown enters it, they all begin to bark. Both Yogamaya and Mahamaya act in all material activities. Very interesting point. Both working simultaneously. In the third canto, we noted that point about Vidura. Vidura saw that when Duryodhana spoke so harshly about him, he saw that the internal energy, Yogamaya, and the external energy, Mahamaya, were working simultaneously. Very mysterious, but very wonderful. But although the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead acts under the Supreme Lord's direction, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Satsarachanan, dog-like watchmen such as politicians and diplomats think they are protecting their neighborhoods from the dangers of the outside world. These are the actions of Maya. But one who surrenders to Krishna is relieved of the protection afforded by the dogs and dog-like guardians of this material world. What do you think of Prabhupada's way of stating things? Heavy. Huh? Heavy. Not, there's no mental platform. because his vision of seeing is from the spiritual platform. Thereafter, all the watchmen were very quickly approached King Kangsa, the ruler of the Bhoja dynasty, and submitted the news of the birth of Devaki's child. Kamsa, who had awaited this news very anxiously, immediately took action. Why was he awaiting the news? Fear. And he had heard the voice in the Akashvani, the voice from the sky saying, Kamsa, the eighth child of Devaki will kill you. You're so foolish. You're driving a chariot in a happy mood, but you don't know that. Who was that voice? Why? Why were they speeding things up?
They wanted to facilitate.
But why? What was the means?
Because they wanted to see Krishna,
but how does that speed it up?
Because Kamsa
will kill the babies. So if he was going to be the eighth child, if Krishna was going to be the eighth child, so first baby is born, second baby is born, third baby is born. So how does it? So in any case, it's going to take almost 8 years, say, or 9 years, 10 years. So how does that speed it up? Ah.
One thing is that it said that it speeded up in the sense that it made Kamsa more and more and more and more angry and inimical towards.
But something else it made him more, and that was the thing that speeded it up, made him more sinful. When he killed those children, his sinful reactions increased, and therefore, when one increases one's sinful reactions, one's death is brought closer. Such a sinful person, such a rascal, but so powerful. Kamsa, as soon as he heard this, he immediately got up from bed thinking, here is Kala, the supreme time factor. Kalayam iti vivala, kalosmin lokachaya krit. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I've come as time. Time I am, the destroyer of everything. So he was overwhelmed thinking that my death is now taking his birth, because this was the awaited for eighth son. Thus overwhelmed, Kamsa, his hair scattered on his head. Why was his hair scattered on his head? He just woke up, and what does this indicate? That he didn't even take the time to comb his hair and make himself presentable. He was in so much anxiety, he ran right out. He at once approached the place where the child had been born. The word kala, Prabhupada explains, is significant. And for Adi, why don't you take a look as we're reading this, the exact words that were used by the Akashvani. Eighth, what?
Eighth.
What's the word? What's the Sanskrit?
Ashtamo garbho.
Garbho, so the eighth
pregnancy,
embryo. So there's no, he doesn't ascribe to it either male or female, but Kamsa's a thinking, he's thinking that it's going to be a boy naturally, because how will he be killed by a Mataji, because Matajis are so gentle and kind-hearted. Yes, Matajis? It's, I thought everyone was going to smile. After the... Oh, yes, we're reading the purport to... Oops, I just lost. The word kala is significant. Although the child was born to kill Kamsa, Kamsa thought that this was the proper time to kill the child so that he himself would be saved. Kala is actually another name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he appears only for the purpose of killing. When Arjuna inquired from Krishna in his universal form, who are you? The Lord presented himself as Kala, death personified, to kill. By nature's law, when there is an unwanted increase in population, kala appears, and by some arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, people are killed wholesale in different ways, by war, pestilence, famine, and so on, disasters. At that time, even atheistic political leaders go to church, mosques, or temples for protection by God or gods, or submissively say, God willing. Before that, they pay no attention to God, not caring to know God or His will. But when kala appears, or the destructive force of Krishna, they say, God willing. Death is but another feature of the supreme kala, the supreme personality of Godhead. At the time of death, the atheist must submit to the supreme kala. And then the supreme personality of Godhead takes away all his possessions. Mrityu savaharas chaham. So as death, everything is taken away. I am that, Krishna says. That force. And forces him to accept another body, tathadehantara prapti. This the atheists do not know, and if they do know, they neglect it, so that they may go on with their normal life. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to teach them that, although for a few years one may act as a great protector or great watchman, with the appearance of kala, death, one must take another body by the laws of nature. Not knowing this, they unnecessarily waste their time in their occupation as watchdogs and do not try to get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada is talking about different kinds of duties that we take on. So no one appoints the dogs, but they are self-appointed watchdogs to protect the neighborhood. And so when the politicians and everyone else has so many self-appointed duties, which include very often protectors of others, the tendency is to neglect the real duty, the real purpose of life. And what is that? To get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can I get Krishna's mercy? How can I get Krishna's mercy? How can I act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased with me? Without Krishna consciousness, as it is clearly said, apropyamam navartante mrityu samsara vatmani, without Krishna consciousness, one is condemned to continue wandering in birth and death, not knowing what will happen in one's next birth. So Kamsa went rushing in, ferociously trying to protect himself. Devaki, helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa, my dear brother, all good fortune unto you, don't kill this girl, she will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman. Now Devaki is, she's, I'll read Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa had previously excused Devaki because he thought that a woman should not be killed, especially when pregnant. But now, by the influence of Maya, he was prepared to kill a woman, not only a woman, but a small, helpless, newborn child. Devaki wanted to save her brother from this terrible, sinful act. Therefore, she told him, don't be so atrocious as to kill a female child. Let there be good fortune for you. Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious, filled with vice. Why? Because I want to do it. I'm the center of existence. That's the hallmark of the consciousness of a demon. But Devaki, on the contrary, although safe because she had already given birth to her own son, Krishna was anxious to save the daughter of someone else. That was natural for her. She wanted to save this other child, even though the other child wasn't her own. And also she's testing to see what Kamsa knew. My dear brother, by the influence of destiny, you've already killed many babies. Now she didn't say, you rascal, you've killed already so many of my children. Why don't you? Because she didn't want to be very accusative. She didn't want to accuse him, because then what would happen? What happens when someone usually accuses us of something? yes, the false ego immediately, the mind immediately rises up to protect the false ego. We become angry. We start building our case against the person and how it was perfectly justifiable what we did. And then we attack. And Devaki didn't want to get Kamsa angry because then he would kill the child. So she worded it very non-accusatively. By the influence of destiny, it's not your fault. You have already killed many, many babies. Each of them is bright and beautiful as fire. These were very, they were cursed personalities. Cursed by who?
By
Hiranyakashipu. For he had the nerve to take shelter of Brahma to get a benediction. These children, sons of Kalanemi. And Hiranyakashipu didn't like them to take shelter of anyone but him. So he cursed them to be killed by their own father, who was Kamsa in this life. But kindly spare this daughter. Give her to me as your gift. Give her to me in charity, because she's only an innocent little girl. How can she be of trouble to you? How can she kill you? Purport. Here we see that Devaki first focused Kamsa's attention on his atrocious activities, his killing of her many sons. Then she wanted to compromise with him by saying that whatever he had done was not his fault, but was ordained by destiny. Then she appealed to him to give her the daughter as a gift. Devaki was the daughter of a Kshatriya and knew how to play the political game. In politics, there are different methods of achieving success. First repression, dhamma, then compromise, sama, then asking for a gift, dana. Devaki first adopted the policy of repression by directly attacking Kamsa for having cruelly, atrociously killed her babies. Then she compromised by saying that this was not his fault. Then she begged for a gift. My lord, my brother, I am very poor, being bereft of all my children. But still I am your youngest sister, and therefore it would be worthy of you to give me this last child as a gift. Sukadeva Goswami continued, piteously embracing her daughter and crying, now who could stand up to such heart-rendering crying and pleas by Devaki? But Kamsa was so evil, his heart was so hard. He was so cruel, Kamsa was so cruel that he chastised her, criticized her, and forcibly snatched a child from her hand. Having uprooted all relationship with his sister because of intense demonic selfishness, Kamsa, who was sitting on his own knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. Just what a scene. And just imagine what just to think of how horrible what he was trying to do was. Just imagine, he had this newborn child who was just born, holding her by the legs, and he was going to smash her on. Just imagine what would have, don't imagine, but just imagine what kind of person this was. He's such a horrible demon. And what's aroused him to such a state of fearful anger? Just he's thinking that this child's going to hurt me. I'll do anything to protect myself. You know, kill this one, I'll kill them. If I feel threatened, I can. This is false ego, unbared. This is what it really is. When it comes to me, and therefore, yasyasya bhakti of Bhagavata Kinsha, manaratena sato davatobahi, that a non devotee, we say in very harsh terms, has no good qualities. Because ultimately, if it's between me and you, from a demon, I'll always choose me because I'm the center. So here's Kamsa. So, you know, people may be very nice and polite, but when it's a difficult time and someone's throat has to be slit, it will be yours. So therefore, because of them manaratain, being on the just on the mental platform, therefore They may have good qualities, but they're only on a certain level. But a devotee, on the other hand, he only values one thing, and that's that Krishna is pleased. So he's capable of sacrificing anything for Krishna's pleasure, even his own life. So this is certainly wonderful. So a devotee can have high character. Then text 9. Satatastat samutpatya sadyo devi ambaram gata adrisya tanuja vishnu sayutasta mahabhuja. So especially note the words adrisya tanuja vishnu. That adrisyata was, it was seen. Anuja means the youngest sister of Vishnu. So the youngest sister, because going back to the point that if there was Vasudev Krishna, if there was just Krishna born in Mathura, and that he was exchanged with Yasoda's child, who was this Yogamaya, then how would they be sisters? There would be no familial relationship, not sisters. So this indicates, as was already indicated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur using the quotation from the Harivamsa, that, and also the point that this child, the younger one, the girl was born at this, when Krishna was, with Vasudeva was leaving the prison house with Krishna. So there were, and yet Harivamsa said that Yasoda gave birth to one child at the same time as Krishna was born. So the indication here again from this adrishyata anuja vishnu that Krishna is also born, the full Krishna is born in Vrindavan as the son of Yasoda, Vasudev Krishna born in Mathura as the son of Devaki Vasudev. The child Yogamaya Devi, the youngest sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga, with 8 arms, completely equipped with weapons. Now he must have been shocked. He was about to kill this child. He was, you know, he was passionately, you know, intensely, ignorantly trying to dash the child against the stone. And he was just about to smash, and she flew up into the sky and assumed the form with 8 arms and weapons just to put some fear in his heart and show him what a horrible thing he was doing. Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone. Oh. But since she was Yogamaya, the youngest sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yasoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? Translation, 10:11. The goddess Durga was decorated with flower garlands, smeared with sandalwood pulp, and dressed with excellent garments and ornaments made of valuable jewels, holding in her hands a bow, trident, arrows, a shield, sword, conch shell, disc, and club, and being praised by celestial beings like Apsaras, Kanaras, Uragas, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who worshipped her with all kinds of presentations. She spoke as follows. O Kamsa, she said, you fool. What will be the use of killing me? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has been your enemy from the very beginning, and who will certainly kill you, has already taken his birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children. After speaking to Kamsa in this way, goddess Durga Yogamaya appeared in different places, such as Benares, and became celebrated by different names such as Annapurna, Durga, Kali, and Bhadra. After hearing the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Let's just imagine what transformation his consciousness went through. Thus he approached his sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudeva, released them immediately from their shackles, and humbly, very humbly, spoke as follows. So she had the weapons, and he became afraid. From a position of complete power, he went into a position of complete fear. And he began to speak and tried to bring, he felt bad. Even though he was a demon, his mind, his emotions, he felt terrible of what he had done. Alas, my sister, alas, my brother-in-law, I am indeed so sinful that exactly like a man-eater Rakshasa who eats his own children, I've killed so many sons born of you. Being merciless and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. I've committed so many sinful activities. Alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies. So where's the providence that lied? The voice in the sky, the Akashvani, which said that child was going to kill you, and the child didn't kill him. So even providence, the demigods, have daivam. They've spoken lies. And I listened to them. And because I listened to them, I committed so many sinful activities. What will be my destination? It's so terrible what I've done. And I'm so sinful that I believed the omen of providence and killed so many of my own sister's children. And now he changes his mood a little bit. Oh, great souls, first with a little bit of flattery, but he's sincerely saying this. But because manarato asato davato bahi, because he doesn't have an absolute reference point, it's just what he's feeling at the moment. He can shift in a moment, and indeed, when he talks to his ministers, who are also demons, he is going to shift. And he's good guy Kamsa, then he's going to turn very soon to horrible Kamsa again, because he can't be trusted. Because, again, he's whatever his mind thinks, he accepts that. Alas, O great souls, your children have suffered their own misfortune. So it sounds like he's saying, it's not my fault, I didn't really do it. And he is saying that, but he's speaking from a point of view much more reasonable, from the point of view of gyan and knowledge. But he sincerely means it. So this is their karma. What could? Don't be aggrieved. He's talking about their suffering. He's preaching to them, basically. Therefore, please do not lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme, and they cannot always live together. In this world, he continues. Now he's getting into the example for his preaching point. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated. But the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. Nahanyate hanyamani sharire. That the soul, for the soul, there is no birth nor death. And once in existence, the soul never ceases to be. So he's preaching some second chapter of Bhagavad Gita here. Mm-hmm. So anyway, how could you lament? Asochanan vasochastam pragyavadam jabhasya say. Yes, one who is wise laments neither for the living nor the dead. Everyone has their karma. And anyway, the soul lives forever. And the body must decompose and turn back into the earth from which it came. One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life. I wonder if he's listening to his own words. Because look what he's done just because of his bodily concept of life and fearing. This is what happens. This is immediately what happens when one sees things in a dual point of view, something other than Krishna's mercy. What happens? Bhayam. One becomes fearful. In this world, one who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and soul becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life. And as soon as we give up the bodily concept of life, give up the attachment to the body, then immediately we're not attached to the byproducts of the body and the bodies we are produced from. So therefore, the pain that you are experiencing due to the lamentation that I have killed your children, this is just due to the bodily concept of life. So please give it up. I know that I'm at fault, I'm sinful, but for your sake, give up this lamentation, the bodily concept of life. My dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. Everyone from the highest position, the lowest position, is under the control of his karma, his destiny. What to do? Huh? Has he? Is he saying that?
Why? That's what he's saying. The results of your karma, so you're guilty.
No, but he's saying. But he's saying, although your sons have been unfortunate, he's not trying to just put it on them. I'm killed by me, but don't lament. You can get rid of your suffering. That's how I took it. You can get rid of your suffering in this way. Good preaching. We also noticed that Haranyakashipu is also capable. Yeah. This is called the preaching of the vulture and the jackal. You know, they can preach when there's a dead body. The jackal preaches. You should leave it for some time. No, the jackal preaches. You should leave it and remember your relationship because he wants to eat it. Something. Oh, because he eats by night. He says, leave it for some time and appreciate the relationship. And the vulture says, no, you should throw it away immediately. What's the use of having a dead body? The soul's already gone. But he's thinking, if they throw it away, I'll be able to eat it because it's the daytime. So the words are very good, but it's motivated. And therefore Krishna's potency doesn't enter the words because the motivation is selfish in either case. Because what there's a saying in English that even the devil quotes Shastra, scriptures. So the devil here is quoting Shastra, speaking philosophy, but he's sincerely doing it. Under the circumstances, Kamsa begged Devaki's pardon by analyzing this Prabhupada's purport to 21, the matter deeply. He was not the cause of the death of Devaki's sons, rather, this was their own destiny. Under the circumstances, Devaki should excuse Kamsa and forget his past deeds without lamentation. Kamsa admitted his own fault. But whatever he had done was under the control of providence. I'm also being controlled by my destiny. Kamsa might have been the immediate cause for the death of Devaki's sons, but the remote cause was their past deeds. This was an actual fact. 22. In the bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization, thinking, I'm being killed, or I have killed my enemies. As long as a foolish person thus considers the self to be the killer or the killed, he continues to be responsible for material obligations and consequently he suffers the reactions of happiness and distress. So this thinking of oneself as the killer or the killed the actor or the victim, entangles one in karma because it evokes the false ego. And when things are done by false ego, then one is entangled in the reactions. So give up this thought. This is just what Prabhupada is quoting here, 1817. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, such a person is not the slayer, nor is he bound by his actions. According to this axiomatic truth, Kamsa pleaded that he was not responsible for having killed the sons of Devaki and Vasudev. Please try to excuse me for such false external activities, he said, and be pacified with the same knowledge. Kamsa begged. He actually begged them. He touched their feet. My dear sister and brother-in-law, please be merciful to such a poor-hearted person as me. Just imagine how bad my consciousness is to have done these things. Just how much, imagine how fearful and suffering I have. So please, you are great exalted souls, be merciful to me. You are saintly persons. Excuse this fallen person's atrocities. And having said this, Kamsa fell at the feet of Vasudeva and Devaki, his eyes full of tears of regret. So first he gave some philosophy, but then he personally felt terrible for what he had done. And fully believing in the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa exhibited his familial affection for Devaki and Vasudeva by immediately releasing them from their iron shackles. So what was the words of Durga? That the baby who will kill you has been born elsewhere. And therefore, what is the use of keeping Vasudeva and Devaki? Actually, the person who would kill him was born right there in the prison house. It was Krishna. So it's true that the Devi lied. When Devaki saw her brother actually repentant while explaining ordained events, she was relieved of all anger. She just accepted it. Remember, they had such simplicity. This was their qualification. They didn't have a revengeful attitude. Just see what exalted persons they are. One devotee once told me, "Don't get angry, get even." Meaning, what's the use of getting angry when you can have revenge? Not such a good devotee, but he's trying. So these people were so pure-hearted. Forgiveness is the most, such a difficult thing to do. So difficult. And yet, look at the quality of these people. When Devaki saw her brother actually repentant while explaining ordained events, she was relieved of all anger. Similarly, Vasudeva was also free from anger. Smiling, he spoke to Kamsa as follows. So 26 and 27 were Vasudeva's reply. Chantarosha Chadevaki was relieved of anger. And Vasudeva also. Devaki gave up anger. Vasudeva also gave it up. So Vasudeva said, "O great personality Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life lacking self-realization differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. Persons with the vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities, lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. They are influenced by the immediate cause which they are busy counteracting because they have no knowledge of the remote supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. And therefore such persons," he's speaking truth, but with pure consciousness, "that really we should see have this knowledge and see Krishna's hand and everything. And yet we have to act practically, but yet we should see Krishna's hand and everything. So this is such an important point, even though it comes out in so many places. I'll read Prabhupada's purport, and then we'll get to Kamsa going back to his bad nature, bad Kamsa. Will come out again. And what's the cause of his bad Kamsa reappearing?
Bad association.
So there may be a lesson in that for us. Purport to 27. Krishna is the cause of all causes, Savakarana Karanam. But one who has no connection with Krishna is disturbed by immediate causes and cannot restrain his vision of separation or difference. What does that mean? Restrain his vision?
Seeing, not seeing Krishna.
Yes, the mind will cut the event's connection to Krishna, and we get angry at the immediate cause and not see the ultimate cause. When an expert physician treats a disease, he tries to find the original cause of the disease and is not diverted by the symptoms of that original cause. Similarly, a devotee is never disturbed by reverses in life. Tateyano kampam susamikshamano. A devotee understands that when he is in distress, this is due to his own past misdeeds, which are now accruing reactions. Although by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, these are only very slight. Karmani nirdhati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. When a devotee under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to suffer because of faults in his past deeds, he passes through only a little misery by the grace of the Lord. Although the disease of a devotee is due to mistakes committed sometimes in the past, he agrees to suffer and tolerates such miseries, and he depends fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he is never affected by material conditions of lamentation, jubilation, fear, and so on. Now what do you think about that, my dear devotees? This is what it means to be a devotee, to see everything in relationship with Krishna and be fixed in that, non-flinchingly. To see Krishna's mercy in everything. Heavy. A devotee, and Prabhupada just says it, a devotee never sees anything to be unconnected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What word did I emphasize? And that leads us to an emphasis I didn't make, which was a devotee never. And then when I look at myself, and then the masquerade is shown. Sukadev Goswami continued. So that was Vasudev's response. Very open-hearted, simple and pure. Now, the scene will change. If you ever seen a Hindi movie, there's always, it looks like it's going to go good, then it goes really bad, and then it looks like it's going to go good, and then it goes really bad. In a Western movie, it always ends up bad. Not always, but in Hindi movies, you can count on a happy ending and a song in the middle. Same thing. We're going to have a song and a dance in the middle. Sukadev Goswami continued, thus having been addressed in purity by Devaki and Vasudev, who were very much appeased, Kamsa felt pleased, and with their permission he entered his home. After that night passed, Kamsa summoned his ministers and informed them of all that had been spoken by Yogamaya, who had revealed that he who was to slay Kamsa had already been born somewhere else. Purport. The Vedic scripture Chandi describes Maya, the energy of the Supreme Lord, as Nidra, Durga Devi Savabhuteshu Nidra Rupena Samastitaha. The energy of Yogamaya and Mahamaya keeps the living entity sleeping in this material world in the great darkness of ignorance. Yogamaya, the goddess Durga, kept Kamsa in darkness about Krishna's birth and misled him to believe that his enemy Krishna had been born elsewhere. Krishna was born the son of Devaki, but according to the Lord's original plan, as prophesied by Brahma, he went to Vrindavan to give pleasure to Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj and other intimate friends and devotees for 11 years. Then he would return to kill Kamsa. Because Kamsa did not know this, he believed Yogamaya's statement that Krishna was born elsewhere, not of Devaki. So there's one other way that we can look at everything that's going on is from the point of view of rasa. And the 10th canto shows many, many different rasas or relationships with Krishna. So how do we judge the intensity of the rasa or the intensity of the experience that the person who's relating with Krishna experiences? Greater or lesser love? How do we judge it? By the intimacy. So here, not in this chapter, but in the previous chapter, we heard that the intimacy of Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj's love with Krishna, because it had no Aishwarya. What was the word? Sitapva? What was the word that Prabhupada used?
Shitila.
Shitila. What does Shitila mean?
Cooling.
Cooling, yes, Shitila. Cooling. So it's cooled down, the love is cooled down by knowledge, Aishwarya Gyan, knowledge of Krishna's potency. So the residents of Vrindavan, on the other hand, it's Shuddha Prema. There is no, or it's so great and so sweet that it doesn't allow the Aishwarya, knowledge of Aishwarya, to diminish it even at the slightest bit. So far, we've seen different rasas with Krishna. If the first one we've seen, in one sense, we can say that Kamsa's, because that's the lowest one. He has a relationship with Krishna, but it's pretty cool. He's always thinking of Krishna. Always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, but it's not at all favorable. He's thinking fearfully that I have to kill Krishna. If I don't kill Krishna, Krishna's going to kill me. But continuously and only he's thinking of Krishna, and that's what's going to happen here. And no matter what he does to protect himself, he's still fearfully and only thinking of Krishna. So this is, in one way or another, this is the consciousness of every conditioned soul. Maybe not as direct as Kamsa, but we have little Kamsas sleeping within, or at least I do, that it's based on false ego, where Krishna is the competitor. And there's actual, the soul in the material world turning his back on Krishna. He actually has enmity with Krishna. Anger, hatred, like Kamsa. And always fearful because of that. And always trying to set up his alternative universe in which he's the center, like Kamsa was, his kingdom. So that's one kind of soul and one kind of relationship with Krishna. And what we're trying to do is to go from this bahyamukh, vimukh, to turning towards Krishna. And that's the process of bhakti. So then the next type of relationship in the realm of bhakti is the demigods, that we heard their prayers. So what they were glorifying Krishna like anything, they were praising him. So what was their desire?
Protection.
They wanted the protection and the removal of the demons from the universe so that they could be protected and that they could do their work. So this is sakam devotion. And Krishna heard the prayers of the demigods, and they were wonderful, and Lord Brahma's prayers, but they're not actually very intimate. They're wonderful. From the point of view of Kamsa, they're wonderful. They're in the realm of bhakti. Even though it's sakam, kama, savakamava. But they're wonderful, exalted souls. And then the next level we heard is Vasudeva and Devaki, who have more than devotees, they're very intimate devotees because they think Krishna is their son. But because they have knowledge of his Aishwarya, they must be fearful and they must be asking for him for things, or fearful at least. And then there's rasa. Real rasa is starting to develop, or more rasa is developing. Higher stages where Krishna is attracted. So practically soon as he takes his birth, because he gets all the other things in other incarnations, but he wants to taste the love of the resonance of Vrindavan, which is imbued with such intimacy and love. Love, the love and the sweetness of love is so dominant. He's so eager to taste that. So practically the moment he's born, so we're looking at it from a different point of view now. From the moment he's born, the first thing he does, he inspires Vasudev to take him across the river to Vrindavan, because he wants to taste the Sudha Vatsalya Prema of Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. How wonderful. And then the rasa will continue to develop as the Bhagavatam continues. Because then it moves from Gokula to actually Vrindavan. And when in Gokul, what rasa is dominant? It's Vatsalya rasa. And then when starting, and also in Gokul, another rasa comes out, and that's Sakya rasa. Of course, others to the more Santaras come is there too. But then Sakiras develops, and then finally in Vrindavan, into the Vrindavan forest, comes the Madhuryaras. And that's developed, and we're going to see all these things as the rasa develops one after another. Each one in the descriptions of the Bhagavatam have their turn. And then finally, in the 29th chapter to the 33rd chapter of this 10th canto, which describes the rasa dance of Krishna, then that's the full expression of the paramour rasa. And then soon as the paramour, the rasa dance is completed, what chapter is it completed? 33. And then there's chapter 34, 35. So 34 is Vidyadhara and Sankachuda, which is some interesting messages in that. And then the gopis in the Jugal Geet. And 35... there's talk about separation, and then immediately Vrindavan Leela starts to wind down with Akura's coming. More or less than this. Yeah, Akura's coming. And then it's... So as soon as Krishna tastes this, and then the mood of separation is established, then it's time for him to go. And then other rasas are experienced as he goes to Mathura, then Dwarka, and then finally he leaves in the 90th chapter. And he performs so many wonderful pastimes in Swakya rasa and Dwarka. It's building up to the most intimate exchange of rasa with Krishna. So that's just a view of what's happening and what's going to happen from that point of view, from the point of view of rasa. So let's just continue and finish this chapter, because now we're going to hear, and Kamsa's going to switch due to his bad association. There's so many nice instructions in here for us all. What is favorable and what is unfavorable is described. So after hearing the master's statements about what had happened and the person, what what Durga Devi said, that the person who's going to kill him, the child who's going to kill him, has been born somewhere else. It's not Devaki. The envious asuras, who were enemies of the demigods and were not very expert in their dealings, advised Kamsa as follows. They became angry when they heard that Kamsa had apologized and let Devaki and Vasudeva free. They became angry. And these were his friends. And these were ministers. Ministers means his advisors. So it's very important who we keep as friends and advisors. So they began to say in anger, if this is so, if the child has been born somewhere else, why make friends with them? O king of the Bhoja dynasty, why be lenient? Beginning today, we shall kill all the children born in all the villages, towns, and pasturing grounds within the past days or 10 days or slightly more. They had a plan, a better idea. The demigods, and they start now flattering him and to build up his confidence because he was feeling so bad because he had done horrible things. So here they have to rebuild his false ego. This is the job of bad friends and bad advisors, to rebuild our false ego. The demigods always fear the sound of your bowstring. They are constantly in anxiety, afraid of fighting. Therefore, what can they do by their endeavors to harm you? Well, being pierced by your arrows, which you discharged on all sides, some of them, who were injured by the multitude of arrows, but who desired to live, fled the battlefield, intent on escaping. Defeated and bereft of all weapons, some of the demigods gave up fighting and praised you with folded hands, and some of them said, appearing before you with loosened garments and hair, they said, O Lord, we are very much afraid of you. Kamsa, you are so powerful. Why are you afraid? Why do you feel bad? Now is the time for us to act. When the demigods are bereft of their chariots after fighting you, when they forget how to use their weapons out of their fear from fighting you, when they are fearful or attached to something other than fighting, or when their bows are broken and they have thus lost the ability to fight, your majesty does not kill them. You're such a warrior. You're so honorable. I forgot to say how he's just killed these little children. In other words, you are merciful, as Prabhupada explains in his purport. It's not that you don't have mercy, but now isn't the time for mercy. Now's the time for engagement, for action, for fighting. We have to defeat the demigods. We have to find this so-called killer who has been born somewhere else and kill him before he kills you. The demigods, 36, boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only where there is no fighting can they show their prowess. Therefore, from such demigods we have nothing to fear. As for Lord Vishnu, he is in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he has gone to the forest. And as for Lord Brahma, he's always engaged in austerities and meditation. The other demigods, headed by Indra, are devoid of prowess. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. Nonetheless, because of their enmity, our opinion is that the demigods should not be neglected. Even though that we don't have anything to fear from them, they can't be neglected either. Therefore, to uproot them completely, engage us in fighting with them, for we are ready to follow you. As a disease, here's an example why we shouldn't neglect them. If initially neglected becomes acute and impossible to cure, there's an Ayurvedic way of assessing a disease that this is making use of. So once a disease is at a certain level, it can't be cured anymore. If it's at a beginning level, you do this. If it's a next stage level, you do that. If it's a next stage level, you do that. But if it's a certain stage, neglected so long, it can't be cured. So if not controlled at first, they are impossible to control later. An enemy, if neglected in the beginning, later becomes insurmountable. So now is the time that we should fight with them. Mulam hi Vishnu Devanam. And here's their plan how to defeat the enemies. The foundation, the mula, the root of all the demigods, he Vishnu is certainly Vishnu, who lives and is worshipped everywhere there are religious principles, traditional culture, the Vedas, cows, brahmanas, austerities and sacrifices with proper remuneration. So here is the essence of religious principles for the pleasure of Vishnu. O King, we who are your adherents, we are your followers in all respect, shall therefore kill the Vedic Brahmins, the persons engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities. So they went right for the Brahmins to kill them. And the cows that supply the milk, the Brahmins and the cows, the very basis of religious Vedic civilization, and from which clarified butter is obtained for the ingredient of sacrifice. Without Brahmins, without cows, there is no sacrifice, there is no pleasing Vishnu. The whole thing is finished from the root. The Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. Lord Vishnu, this is their plan. The super soul within everyone's heart is the ultimate enemy of the asuras and is therefore known as Asura Dvit. He is the leader of all the demigods because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. This great saintly person, the great saintly person, sages and Vaishnavas also depend upon him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. That was their plan. Persecute the Vaishnavas, kill the Brahmins, kill the cows, stop the sacrifices. The whole culture will be finished. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Now what Kamsa has entered into the moment of choice. And who will he follow? Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus, having considered the instructions of his bad ministers, Durmantribi, they were bad ministers, Kamsa, who is bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence because he was a demon, decided to persecute the saintly persons, the Brahmins, as the only way to achieve his good fortune. Vipariyato smriti. This is what happens when we turn our back on Krishna. We see what is good is bad, and what is bad is good. Prabhupada's purport, and then there's just a few more verses with no purport, almost. Please listen. We might find some good instructions in here that will change our life. Srila Lochan Das Thakur has sung. Who has sung? Yes. Apana karma bunjaya samana kahaye lochanadas. Instead of taking good instructions from the sages and the shastras, godless non-devotees act whimsically according to their own plans. Actually, however, no one has his own plans because everyone is bound by the laws of nature and must act according to his tendencies in material conditioned life. What does that mean? No one has his own plans. We have our own plans. What does it mean? The Prabhupada says we don't have our own plans. Because no one has his own plans because everyone is bound by the laws of nature and must act according to his tendencies in material and conditioned life. So why don't we have our own plans? It's because these are the plans that are just born of our karma. Therefore, so it's not my plan, this is Maya's plan. Therefore, one must change one's own decision and follow the decision of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Is that easy? If What is it called? What's the Sanskrit word for changing your own decision and following the decision of Krishna and his devotees? What's the Sanskrit word for that? Huh? Or sharanagati, or as we usually translate it, is surrender. Agree to do what Krishna wants. Better way. Then one is rescued from punishment by Yamaraj. Kamsa was not uneducated. It appears from his talks with Vasudeva and Devaki that he knew all about the laws of nature, but because of his association with bad ministers, he could not make a clear decision about his welfare. Therefore, the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarvas Shastre Koi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarvas Siddhi Hoi. If one desires his real welfare, he must associate with devotees and saintly persons, and in this way rectify the material conditions of his life. That's Prabhupada's advice in his purport. What Kamsa failed to do. And Sukadev continues in just a few more verses. These demons, the followers of Kamsa, were expert at persecuting others, especially the Vaishnavas, and could assume any form they desired. After giving these demons permission to go everywhere and persecute the saintly persons, Kamsa entered his palace. So charged with passion and ignorance, and not knowing what was good or bad for them, the asuras, for whom impending death was waiting, began the persecution of the saintly persons. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Maharaj Prakrit, when he heard what they were going to do, he's a king and he has a spirit to stop them. How could they do this? No one can do things like that. I've chastised Kali. But he had renounced everything. But that was his spirit. And he was getting very, what's the right word? His spirit was arising, his Kshatriya spirit, and he was disturbed, and he was... So therefore, these two verses, 45 and 46, Sukadev speaks to pacify him. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. So charged with passion and ignorance, and not knowing what was good or bad for them, the asuras, for whom impending death was waiting. So don't worry, they're going to get what they deserve. Began the persecution of the saintly persons. My dear king, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 4th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Atrocities of King Kamsa. And the next chapter, after chapter 4, as you may have guessed, is chapter 5. Thank you. You're very serious about listening 4 hours straight almost. Not easy. Any questions or comments? Not possible to sustain it on the level of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. They can't, and they're not. They don't have the qualification for that. But this is the typical, not typical, because it's still so unlimitedly exalted. It's only when we speak in a way saying it's lesser, It's only in relationship to the highest of all things. But in relationship to us, it's the Himalaya Mountains, and we're an ant at the bottom. But yet, it's not on the level of what Yasoda and Nanda feel. But this is when the Lord comes as the child. They're aware of it, like Aditi wanted the Lord to come as a child so that Vamadeva would bring the kingdom back. So that was, there was that kind of motive in her. So she knew that the, that, that Vamanadeva was the Lord. And this happens. So one, but still they had it. But when Krishna exhibits opulence, they would take him on his lap, but they couldn't get it out of their mind that he's actually the Supreme Lord. And when he exhibits his opulence, they really remember, and then their reverence goes up, and they fold their hands, and they can't take him on their lap. But the Brijbasis have a different qualification. And when they see Krishna being worshipped and understand, oh, he's the Supreme Lord, they say, oh, this is such a peculiar place, this Goloka Vaikuntha. We can't, Krishna, he should be running to us and embracing us and sitting on our laps, and we want to run to him, but we can't, we're being restrained. We want to go back to Vrindavan.
In so far we are, I have to read it to everyone.
So let me say that what the Bhagavatam is doing in its own way is establishing these different levels of what love of God is, and different measurements of love and different intimacies. So we know what the highest is and who are the most venerated.
I have a question. Is How is it that they wanted to have the Lord as their son in this world? Where does this desire come from? Because it's better to go back to the spiritual world and have your original pastimes.
There's so many living entities. So one can say that it's impelled by Leela, but one can also say that this is what they wanted. And this was a desire that they could have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, millions of years ago, when people thought differently, and their consciousness was different.
Because it seems that they had the adhika, being the Lord, obviously, since they got him. So, if they had the adhika, why did they have to go through all this?
But they became purified. That's what it said. They passed through different stages, and when their love increased after 12,000 years, when in celestial years, after it increased to a certain point, then Krishna came and said, now I will come as your son. So after this, having Krishna as their son, then their qualification may have changed, and then they could go back home. So they had this desire. Say anymore.
So coming to that, I don't know, but I would think that Krishna Karavana and Vasudeva Krishna, that also shows progression in terms of the Lord's relationship to them as son. It seems like they're with each.
I think it's a good, a legitimate, good comment. Yeah, and then after that, they have Krishna's son, they're ready.
Because even in Satya Yuga or previous yugas, the highest was not offered. So the highest form of love was not available.
See, also when you don't, and the question comes from the point of view of Prajabhakti, where you're thinking we could have the Lord as a son. But when people think about God, reverential God or Vishnu, they don't think of becoming the mother of God, Vishnu, right? So this is something really unique to Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that it Mahaprabhu's gift that he teaches this intimacy. That's possible. Not God is not you're the son of God. Please, I have this problem. This. But rather, you're the father of God. So this is no one thinks like this, and they didn't think like that. So they wanted to have God as their son. They were there, and because of their purity, they got what they wanted, and Krishna gave them so much more.
Where did they get these instructions of performing such heavy austerities?
It doesn't say in the Bhagavatam, does it?
In regard to her question, could we say that this austerity they went through and this desire to have a child applied to the amshas within the Vedavid and Vasudev? They were amshas of Siddhartha and Krishna.
Yes.
And those were obviously not Nitya Parikara.
Yes.
So they had to undergo certain things for their purification, and but they were acting within the Vedavid and Vasudev.
Yeah. So, but that's also so hard to understand too.
Yes, that's understandable.
Because then, what are all those souls doing inside of? How do they decide if they should go left or right? One says,
"Well, I had this question to my guru at one time, and he was telling us that, for instance, in Madanandara, there's four entities, and he was saying that sometimes they are given a way to access the body of Nitya Parikara, Nitya Siddha Parikara, to perfect their life." To just live within them, just to perfect their own progression. It's like a...
It's hard to understand.
It's hard to understand.
Yeah, that's the point I wanted to...
It's difficult. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's not meant for the... for the mind of a finite soul, conditioned soul, to penetrate deeply. This just, you know, on a certain... certain level, we just fold our hands, say, this is what the acharyas say, so we accept. Because the intelligence can't penetrate that far. But by bhakti, that was the point of the last time, so many, when the demigods' prayers, you can be known only by bhakti. So what they were doing was bhakti, because they were meditating upon him and trying to please him by their austerities. Like Brahma, when he performed his austerities, his tapa. It was for his pleasure. Yes, Prabhu.
In chapter 3, there's a mention of Guni Bhuta, Pradhani Bhuta, Kevla. So they're related to sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prem bhakti. The state of prem bhakti is very difficult to achieve. Maybe out of billions of people, maybe one will achieve that stage. Is that very a necessary stage to attain, to go back to what happened?
You mean, are you asking whether there are devotees in Goloka Vrindavan who have not attained prema bhakti yet? No. Or are you asking that someone here can get so much mercy that it makes up for his deficiency, his lack of prem, that he can go back to Godhead?
Here, it's very difficult to attain that stage. And is that...
No, we can't attain it here.
Can't.
I've heard bhava. And then you can get a suitable body in it. Bhava, and then for prema, you have to get a different kind of association and join Krishna's leela in the material, where he's performing his activities in the material world, and get the association of the Nitya Siddha Parikars of Krishna. And then by their association, so much depends on association. So what was your question again?
So, but you're saying that, in this world, this material world, how you... you can attain prema bhakti, even if you attain bhava bhakti, you can go back to Godhead.
But if you're with Krishna in this material planet, in the material universe where he's visiting, that's back to Godhead because it's with Krishna. And you don't have an ordinary old material body. You have an extraordinary body. Now ask your question again.
I guess you answered.
No, but what's? I'd like to find out what the question inside of the question is. What do you really wish to know?
Well, I've heard that this process of bhakti yoga is very simple. It gets very difficult as you go to bhava bhakti. You know,
it's just the opposite. It's easy if you're in bhava bhakti. But it's just when you have the consciousness of a monkey, then it's difficult. But, and also when it's in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, one of the early purports, Prabhupada explains what he means when he says it's very simple. It's simple to understand, but difficult to apply. And then also, in addition to that, it is simple compared to the processes of jnana and karma. So these are two reasons why it's simple. But it's also simple because all you have to do is chant Hare Krishna, follow the principles, etc., and serve. And then either today or tomorrow, you'll be there. We'll be there as we make advancement. There was that purport that we read, I thought that was so wonderful. But just by chanting Hare Krishna, if we take shelter of Krishna's holy names, whatever we lack will be made up by the potency of the holy names. But we have to really deeply take shelter of them in serving.
First we chant, then we do it offensively, non-offensively, then we do it lovingly.
And then we do it very lovingly.
Very lovingly.
And then we do it very, very, very lovingly. And then when we can't live for a moment without Krishna, so Krishna says, then he makes you wait a little longer, just so the desire is so intense. But there's an actual process.
It's very difficult to imitate Haridas.
To what?
And it's very difficult to imitate Haridas. I mean, he did 22 hours of
chanting. Yeah, so we're not asked to imitate Haridas, we're asked to serve Prabhupada. That's some imitating Haridas or following in the footsteps of Thakur Haridas. We cannot do that with our material minds. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said this very explicitly. But what we can do is become servants of the servants of Prabhupada. And in our own little way, try it with as much sincerity as we can do, and understanding our decrepit position and very lowly position, pray that Krishna accept our humble and insignificant services and try to do something for the pleasure of Prabhupada and Krishna. And if we can do that with devotion, then we should rely on Krishna for the rest. You place me where you want. I'm not qualified, but I despite my qualification, want to serve you. So please accept my service. That's my request. Even though it's contaminated by so much false ego and so many things, please accept my service. So much lust, so much anger, so much greed, so much this. I have no ability to approach you. Really, but out of your mercy, please accept this. And then Kirtaniya Sadhari. Now, what's your question? I'm asking seriously. We have to start at a point that we can do. if we, sometimes in the journey to Krishna, it's good to look ahead. Because if we look ahead, we become, oh, this is wonderful, I want to get that. But sometimes, when we're looking ahead, it seems so far away that it's good to look behind and see how far we've come already. And then we get encouraged, and then we can look ahead. But sometimes we have to look back and see that we've come a long way. Otherwise we can get discouraged. And if we get discouraged, it's too difficult. We lose our hope. And if we lose our hope, we've lost everything. We lose our life, our enthusiasm, our conviction. So sometimes we have to look back too.
My question is, how to go back to Godhead in this life?
What?
Is that desire?
Do you want to go back to Godhead in this life? There's so many instructions will come. There were some very nice ones about chanting the holy name. There was one 2 days ago about book distribution. There was one about chanting 16 rounds a day, quality rounds. So if we chant, if we can't chant like Tekor Haridas, 192 perfect rounds a day, we should try and chant 16. And if we can't chant 16, success, try to chant one with sincerity, one mantra. But really, we can only go back to Godhead, not by our qualification, but by mercy. So we have to learn, we have to please. We have to know the art of pleasing Krishna. And then perhaps by His mercy, if that's what we really want, He'll give us that. Are you prepared to wait and let Him take care of you?
Yeah, well, He has taken care of me all the time. He will.
So you place yourself in His hands?
Yes.
Then what is to worry? So He's taking care of you. It's like if you get on, where are you from? Where did you grow?
I lived here for a long time.
Where?
Now I'm living here for the last
where, you year. Lived in where?
Seattle, Washington.
Okay, she told me that before. Okay, so in how did you get from Seattle to here?
I had a vision, maybe.
No, not what caused you, but in a mechanical way, how did you do it?
How did I come here?
Yes.
Well, I took very early retirement and I thought of...
And then, when the stage, when you're actually ready to come, what did you do?
I just came here and...
How did you come?
Airplane.
An airplane. Where did you get on the airplane?
Previously.
Where?
Seattle.
Okay, so you got on the airplane in Seattle. And once you were on the plane, you could just relax. Even though you're still in Seattle, you can just relax. Just don't get off the plane in the middle of the flight. But once you're on the plane, and I have this experience, there's so much anxiety, you're going to go, then you get on the plane and you go, ah. So you might not be there yet, but you're on the plane, so don't worry. And then you have to put yourself in the pilot's hands.
There's a danger of death.
Oh, be quiet. put the poor fellow at so much anxiety. But on this plane there are, so if there's danger at every step, even on the plane, then you have to keep your seatbelt fastened. And pray. And you're in Krishna's hands. And that's what it means. You're following the process. You're placing yourself in Krishna's hands and you're you're doing your best, then it will take its time. If you only can afford economy fare, there'll be trouble and it's crowded. Don't worry. So somehow maybe, but if you're sitting first class, you can sit back and enjoy and everything. But I can only afford economy class. So there has to be sometimes some trouble for me on the way. But still, if I just stay on, I'll get there. And then you have to get off in Delhi. But it feels so much closer. You're walking through, and if you give the immigration people some Mahaprasadam, they're happy and they say Hare Krishna. You know you're very close to home. And then you get in a taxi or some, and then you have to go through Heli Delhi, and it takes some time. But then you get through Delhi, and then you read about it, and then you start getting closer to Vrindavan, and you start feeling the Vrindavan atmosphere. And oh, yes, and then you start singing. And then you turn down the road to Krishna Balaram Mandir. You're almost home. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sometimes you don't like who's sitting next to you either when you're on the plane. What to do? Just keep the seatbelt fastened.